Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Are you ready?
Let's clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
He's gone from suck to blow.
What?
Yeah, well, speaking of blow, that's exactly what happened yesterday out here at UC Health Training Center, as the offense just did not click yesterday. The ball on the ground, it becomes demoralizing when those things happen to you. It reminded me of what we saw out here for the last two seasons before this year. There's excitement about Case Keenum. There's excitement about this growing offense. There's excitement about the young players. But yesterday, the young players, you know what they look like? They look young. Pritch said it days ago. He said, you know what's exciting is when your young players look old and your old players look young, and that's where the Broncos are. Well, yesterday, their young players looked young. They struggled in blitz pickup. They struggled understanding the nuance of blitz pickup. They understood, they broke down in that whole facet of practice. And like I said earlier, the ball was on the ground. It just was ugly. It was demoralizing for this offense. And here's the good news, though. You get to come back today and you get to fix those things. And I believe that they can get that fixed with the leadership of a Case Keenum and some of these players that they have on this offense. And this offensive line has got to step up as well. So listen, yesterday was a bad day. We'll see how they respond today in practice when this offense gets its cleats on the grass.
That was awesome.
Clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
All right, well, I mean, you know, that's the way camp goes sometimes, and sometimes they have your number. The concern for me, Troy, is when you lack some nuance, you lack some understanding, and that's part of being young. You've got to learn those things. In a blitz pickup drill, when the defense is bringing five, you got to be able to pick that up with your five. You got to be able to, you know, change protections, point out the right guys. You've got to be able to cheat a protection. You got to pick up the guy coming off the slot. But most importantly, you've got to be able to read that stuff. I was sitting up in the bleachers watching that with a higher vantage point, and I was watching with Mike Kliss, and I was basically calling out, well, this guy's coming. There's that guy's coming off the edge. That backer's coming. That slot corner's coming. And you could see it based on, you know, who you had to cover, where the man coverage stuff was, and just from a body language standpoint. At one point, I said, watch, Kliss, this guy on the edge who looks like he's coming, he's dropping into coverage. They're going to double team the outside receiver. Sure enough, it's exactly what they did. Partly because I've seen it for so long and I've watched it for so long, you can tell the body language. What bothers me is the Broncos, in that practice, they didn't pick up on it. And that's young players. That's Garrett Bowles getting beat around the edge. That is a young running back who doesn't pick up a blitzer. Those are the things that went down a tight end who doesn't recognize the situation and who's coming. And you know, like defensive players, here's the thing about defensive players. Defensive players, are selfish. Like some baseball players, like there are certain guys that aren't going to lay down a bunt or don't want to do things to ruin their average. You know, there are certain baseball players who are exceptionally selfish when it comes to getting their at-bats, right? They're not going to do the small ball type of things. They're not going to, you know, hit behind a runner and move them over or hit, you know, it. They're not doing those things, Troy. The issue that you get into with those type of drills, those blitz pickup drills, is with a young player, you've got to understand nuance. For instance, if I see a corner that I know is blitzing off the slot, I can tell. How do you tell? Well, he's pressed, he's leaning in, he's looking at you, his body language is saying, I'm coming, I'm not going to cover this guy, and there's somebody that can replace him in coverage. Meaning, if you've got all those looks and you don't have like a safety over the top, you understand that, well, if that guy blitzes, there's nobody to pick up that receiver. So what happens? He's not going to blitz, right? But if there all of a sudden is a defender that can replace him in coverage, now you're like, oh, okay, all the body language signs tell me, one, that he's blitzing, tell me, two, that when he does blitz, they've got somebody to cover so he can blitz. So what does that do? What does that effectively change for me if I'm an offensive tackle? So if I see that and it's not my responsibility, what's going to happen to the guy that I'm going to block? And we used to say this all the time when I was playing, two asses don't fit through one hole. Meaning that two defenders aren't blitzing through the same gap. So if you've got that corner coming off the edge, off the slot, what's going to happen to the defensive end that's rushing you as an offensive tackle? He's going to go inside of you,
yeah,
right?
He's going to
pirate down inside. So my set, I have to set accordingly. You jump out, you get beat to the inside, all of a sudden there's an inside pressure on your quarterback. That's not understanding the nuance of blitz. That's not understanding what they're doing. And that's what I saw yesterday. That's a real concern because one thing we know about Case Keenum, Case Keenum can play. When Case Keenum's protected, when the offense is operating, like Case Keenum can play. And that's a concern when you're young and you don't have a lot of football, quote unquote, experience. Like, think about this now. Think about where you are with a Garrett Bowles at left tackle. Guy played, what, 2 years of college football, 3 years of college? He played a...
2 years, one JUCO. And
one JUCO.
And Utah.
Utah.
Yeah.
So he played 2 years of college football. There's not... You haven't seen a lot.
Right.
And then last year you played next to Max Garcia, so there wasn't great communication and a great base of knowledge. So those are things that have to get better. And they have to get dramatically better before this season kicks off. And Vance Joseph talked about this yesterday. He talked about the fact that they're not game planning for Minnesota. That to me is kind of a double-edged sword. Like, you're going to work on some Minnesota stuff, but you're not actually putting a game plan together, meaning you're just going to run plays. Here's what I love about it, is that you're going to see how guys react to things they haven't seen. You're going to get some things that you haven't seen, and you're going to have to block them. You're going to have to communicate on the field. That to me is a really good thing, Troy. I think that's like we always said this when I was playing, you don't get to take a script out. You don't have the plays that you're going to run and the defenses that are going to be run against you. Like when you walk out there and say, hey guys, it's third down and six, they're going to bring the Sam, you know, they're going to bring the Sam Will blitz on this. So they're going to bring strong safety Will, right? I mean, you don't have that. So you've got to be able to react. You've got to be able to see those things, and that can be beneficial to a football team. But like when you're deciding your next, like they came out yesterday, Troy, with their roster, with their depth chart. That can be imperative when you pick out the next depth chart. Like, hey, this guy responded really well to a couple of really bad looks. He diagnosed it. He made the right play. He blocked the guy. He did it quickly. Like, that's good stuff. And those are the kind of things that you're going to have to see against Minnesota on Saturday.
But how do you accelerate that beyond the film room? I mean, I just read a quote from Nick Saban the other day that you don't practice till you get it right. You just practice so much you can't get it wrong anymore. But they don't have that luxury in pro ball. You can't sit out here for 6 hours and work on it. So I guess something we'll talk about after the break. But how do you microwave the development of an offensive line that clearly has concerns?
Yeah.
And that could, if doesn't perform up to its potentials, could undermine Case Keenum. I mean, he's a good quarterback, but if you have him throwing 30, 35 times with a leaky offensive line, you're not going to like the results.
That's 100%, and we'll talk about that exactly. How do you microwave the process? How do you get guys up to speed, especially guys that don't have a lot of football experience? We'll discuss next.
Mark Schlereth here. When you're looking to replace your windows, you want the best. That's why I endorse Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. They sell Infinity from Marvin fiberglass windows. You can't buy Infinity windows from big box stores, so you know they never compromise on quality. Infinity fiberglass windows offer unparalleled value, energy efficiency, and durability. So call my friends at Gravina's Window Center of Littleton, 303-794-0490, or find them online at windowsforyourhome.com, and make sure you tell them Stink sent you.
Hey, welcome back, Schlereth. The Nevins, Mark Schlereth alongside Denver 7, Troy Rank, Bronco Insider, Rockies Insider, cover the Rockies for 20 years. We're live from UCL Training Center as Broncos practice number 10 kicks off at about 9:30. And we mentioned going into break, kind of microwaving the development of young players. And you know, I think really, Troy, it's just exceptionally difficult. It's exceptionally difficult without a ton of practice. You think about the way things used to get done and like, I understand that there's only so many practices that you have, and there's only so many padded practices, so there's only so many of those blitz pickup drills that you can get. And like I said, the ball was on the ground five times. It was a demoralizing practice for the Denver Broncos. The offense wasn't in sync. They didn't understand the nuance of blitz pickup. And it was ugly. You know, there was a quarterback, from a quarterback standpoint, they couldn't get the ball off. I mean, there was, in that period alone, it was a 10-minute period, there probably was six sacks. Or at least would have been six sacks and a bunch of hurries and a bunch of either knocked down the quarterbacks or just balls that had to get thrown away. So it was ugly. It was not a pretty drill. And as I mentioned, it's a demoralizing type of thing that happens to you. Well, in the past, the way practice used to be, you know what you do? You go back out in the afternoon in full pads and you do it again. And then you do it again the next morning. And then you do it again the next afternoon. And then you do it again. And you do it again until you got it right, until you understood the timing, until you got that, you know, until you went through it. You don't get to do that in today's football. So how do you microwave that? Obviously, you get in the film room, you get with your guys, you study it, and you hope they learn how to pick that stuff up. But, you know, there's an old quote from J.C. Penney said, the best teacher is the job itself. And the way the league is currently constructed, the way the collective bargaining agreement has put practice together, it's really hard to work on the job itself.
Well, the ability for players in the NFL, Mark, to process information is more critical than ever. The cerebral side of the game, because you just mentioned it. There's only so many reps a guy can get. I mean, they're not going to practice until the, you know, midnight. And they can't by rule. And so the players that excel and make impacts early in their career typically do what? They understand the game through film and through nuances. And the hard part of that, though, is even if you go away from the facility and you're in your playbook, as you just mentioned, reading it in a playbook or seeing it on your iPad is completely different than living it in real time. And so how do you learn? Some guys are visual learners. Some guys need the coach to just put it on a paper for them. But in some of these cases with these young guys, they struggle to pick it up quickly. And everyone's like, well, why? They've played football their whole life. They're going against the best athletes they've ever gone against and the best disguised schemes they've ever seen. Because in college, as you know, guys can get away with talent. I'll just show up. I might not know this exactly, but I'll hook him. I'm physically better. I'm going to impose my will. Well, again, good luck against Von Miller. Good luck against the blitz with three guys coming. You better know technique. And there's no easy way other than to the athlete at the professional level has to buy in. He has to want it more than anyone else, more than his coaches, more than his family, more than anybody. If the athlete buys in, he gives himself a chance to be successful. And a lot of these guys buy in physically through their workouts and off season. But what I see is some of them forget the mental side.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter how great a shape you're in and how strong you are if you play slow at this level. And the only way you can play fast for me is you know your playbook to where it becomes a habit where you can't forget it because it's so ingrained in your mind. And some guys just don't get that, Mark. They just don't. You played with guys like that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we've seen it. There are always those guys that are disappointments, those potential guys. Potential's a four-letter word, and it is one of those things where you'd look at guys and say, man, that guy was a freak. He was gifted. He was whatever, but he just never got it. He never could play. And you're 100% right when it comes to your ability to process information and your ability, you know, to take what you see and translate that and transfer it onto a football field from a film room or whatever. It's really funny. I had the conversation with Elway on Sunday during the training camp practice, and we were just talking about how it never looks the same. And I think that's one of the things that happens to you, especially as a young player, is that the coaches draw it up, you see it on the film, and the film that you watch, it never looks that way. Like, there's a different vantage point. You know, when the eye is in the sky, you know, and you got the camera,
eye in the sky
right,
lie.
Right, and you got the camera way up there, and you know, you got this bird's eye view of the all 22, and you're like, oh, okay, I see where that guy is. Then all of a sudden, you sink down to field level, and you know, you've got your cleats in the grass, and you're looking at it from that angle as opposed to a bird's eye view. It just doesn't look the same.
What if they showed it to him in GoPro? Would that help an athlete? If they showed the film for a lineman in GoPro, to like having him look and spin so you see it at your level?
Right.
Would that help, or is that just confusing?
Well, here's the thing. You get in a stance and guys are moving around. You know, sometimes you're looking through the top of your helmet and you're just seeing feet. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so it just becomes a really it's a different perspective that you can really only get while you're on the field. And it's one of those situations where, again, it always looks different. And you'll look at something like, hey, man, when we practice this, like we game plan, like they're going to play the Minnesota Vikings on Saturday. So, you know, today is what it is. Thursday they'll start scripting some stuff against what Minnesota runs, right? So they'll run some carded things, and Thursday and Friday they'll run some carded plays. Like, here's a look we suspect we're going to get because this is their base defense, and here's where they should be. And you'll walk out there on the field, and that card you worked on, it's not going to look like that. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. When we you can't call timeout and say, well, coach, when we practiced this on Thursday, that safety was lined up there, and now the safety's lined up, you know, 3 yards inside of where you had them lined up earlier. Like, that's not fair. Like, timeout. Illegal formation, right? Can we get a timeout on this? They weren't supposed to be lined up there. Well, that's how it works. And you've got to adjust, and you've got to be able to see those things. So, like Troy, weak side, outside linebacker. He's usually in a spot, right? There's usually a spot where he pretty much lines up. And it's pretty consistent where he's going to line up. Now, all of a sudden, you break the line of scrimmage. Like, these are things that just automatically resonate with me. And that guy is a yard deeper and a yard further outside from where he normally lines up. So he's cheating a little bit, right?
Right.
So what's your automatic thought as an offensive lineman? Well, all of a sudden that guy's in a different spot. Something's going on, right? Something smells. So what is he doing? Well, do we have a slot receiver out there? Okay. So here it comes. There's going to be a safety blitz. He's going to try to get underneath the slant route. He's trying to get underneath that slot receiver, that weak side linebacker, going to get underneath that guy, and the safety's going to come and replace him. So now all of a sudden they're exchanging responsibility. So now he's in coverage underneath, and that safety's coming. And you've got to be able to see that, and that's a thought that has to register in your brain right now. Like, something's up.
Yeah.
Like, that guy's in a bad position.
The problem is if you react to it based on what you see physically instead of, I mean, you need to react mentally at
right,
the line. That doesn't look right. That doesn't smell right.
What's the
you
potential?
Sniff it out.
Right. What's coming?
Because if you're just like, oh, I don't know, and then turn to find it, it's too late.
Right.
Even if you clip him, the play is disrupted. And you're third down, you're off the field.
Right. It's what I say all the time. You're going to get edged. Meaning somebody is going to get on your edge and you're going to be in a compromising position when that happens to you. And so the issue, the guys that succeed, you know, bringing this back full circle to what you said, the guys that succeed are the guys that mentally prepare, that mentally can see it, they can understand, you know, what's coming next type of thing. And now they're able to react because they've already gone through the scenario. They go, whoa, 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 why is that guy over there? Something smells. What's coming? Let me look around. Uh-oh, here comes a safety. He's cheating it. He's sneaking down. I told you this. Defensive players are selfish because why? Like, think about this from an offensive line perspective. If you and I are playing against each other, I could whip your ass 65 plays in a row. You get one sack, you're a hero at the end of a game.
You had a great game.
And you had a great game, and I was horrible. And the opposite of that is true. I killed you 65 plays in a row. You got one play on me. And so defensive players tend to be really selfish because they rely on stats. You want to go to the Pro Bowl? You got to get a bunch of sacks. Like, Von Miller had 11 sacks last year, and a lot of people said he had an off year.
But he had 10. He was disruptive.
He was probably the
most disruptive.
Right.
Outside linebacker in football last year.
But he had a great year. He had a great year. But again, here's all you have to look. Watch a quarterback fall down. What happens when a quarterback trips over like a running back? How many guys are fighting to dive to be the first guy to touch him, right? Because that's a sack. You know, I mean, that's how defensive players function and the way they go about their business. And you know, that's why it's different. That's why nuance becomes so important. And it's so important for this offense to get better, to go where they want to go. Hey, man, something really cool happened. A former Bronco weighed in on a goat. We'll tell you about it next.
Are you ready for some football?
This is Four Down territory.
Words cannot say how much I truly love you.
Donkey Kong Sue.
Double team, leaping high, falling hard.
No soy fiesta.
Hurry.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. First down.
It was one of the worst part of sessions we've had. I don't know how you'd make it any simpler. We literally have what the play would be in our terminology on the card. The effort level is very low, especially what I'm accustomed to having run that period for a number of years. You know, I think the NC has really progressed. GMO, obviously 16, but everybody else was kind of piss poor.
There's Aaron Rodgers talking about scout team and essentially working the scout team, the receiving core. And let's face it, I mean, you look at the Green Bay Packers, you look at where they've been last year. Aaron Rodgers obviously hurt last year, but you look at the lack of production. They got rid of Jordy Nelson behind a couple of guys like Cobb and Geronimo Allison, who is there, and you know, a couple of their standard receivers. He basically says we need these third guys and these fourth guys and these fifth guys to pick it up, and our effort level isn't good enough to win. And that's been a problem with Green Bay. Hey, Aaron Rodgers is getting older, man. That guy's got one Super Bowl championship. He's one of the great quarterbacks that's ever played. I mean, this is a guy that needs on his resume, he needs more championships to really solidify himself as one of the top quarterbacks that's ever played, Troy.
Well, I see Aaron Rodgers. Nobody means more to their team in the NFL than he does. He is the LeBron James of the Green Bay Packers.
Relax.
And he deserves to get some help. Honestly, I don't mind him calling a few guys out here at this point. They have done him wrong by their personnel. At times their defense has been porous. At times their offensive line. And they rely so much on his arm talent that it just seems to me that they could be wasting his prime. Because he, from a talent perspective, Mark, I don't know if you'd agree, he should be a top five quarterback of all time. He might be top three of all time. The ability to spin it, the ability to mobility,
right.
Accuracy, arm strength.
For me, in my time, you know, going back to the late 80s, he's the best I've ever seen.
Most talent, okay.
Most talent I've ever seen, and that's a guy, let's face it, you want to get in that, you know, you want to be at the big boys table when it comes to Hall of Fame quarterbacks, you got to have more championships on. You're going to sit at the little kids' Thanksgiving table.
You can't be the all-time great with one. You just can't. The way that argument is framed,
yeah.
You can't.
No, you can't. Next in four down territory.
Second down.
These guys have played a lot of football, and they understand how to win, what the formula is, and, you know, paid the same way. It took a lot of just the habits, you know, how he came to work, how he took care of himself physically, the way he watched tape, the way he practiced, the extra work he put in, those things that, you know, translate over Sunday. And, you know, I believe Tom's the same way.
That's Eric Decker talking about Tom Brady, just the similarities between Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. You covered Peyton Manning. What was it like covering Peyton Manning? What was he like as the quarterback of the Denver Broncos when you got to cover
him? My best friend, Peyton Manning.
I've never seen an athlete more obsessed about success than Peyton Manning. Everything mattered. Every detail mattered to him in every situation. And he was demanding. He was hard to play for if you were a teammate, but he made you better because you had to be on point. I saw him one time early when I was covering them. I think it was 2014, Mark, my first year back on the NFL beat. He did a goal line drill with Emmanuel Sanders after a practice where they sat there and mimicked snap counts and audibles for like 30 minutes without throwing a ball. He just went through reads and audibles to then they would stop, start it again, stop, start. And it was just the amazing. This wasn't when he was working with a rookie. He was working with a veteran. And Sanders, it's a complete attention. And, again, I've seen guys who work, Juan Pierre, Troy Tulowitzki, Matt Holliday, Todd Helton, who work themselves to the point where their hands are bleeding or their eyes are bleeding. They just can't stop working. I've never seen a guy combine the physical and mental side of it like Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning, one of the all-time greats, obviously, no question about it. Next in four down territory.
Third down.
That guy in a little coat.
Don't.
That guy in a little coat. That guy in a little coat.
Take it off. Serious.
Richard, what's happening?
Oh, there you have it. Noah Spence of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Noah Spence want to put on some weight, play a little defensive end. He's a linebacker type of guy, tweener. put on 35 pounds this offseason, said he ate 9 meals a day, 9,000 calories a day. This is the diet that I'm on right now, and I've got to change my habits, Troy, because I am really fat right now. 9,000 calories a day. What? How much, like, if you did that for a month, how much do you think you weigh?
How much would I? 260?
What do you weigh right now?
Like 185-ish?
260. You think you get up to 260?
I think I could.
We could roll you out to this on this field if you got up to 260. That'd be a good look. We ought to do that. Then, you know.
I need to go the other way. I need to go 9 calories a day for the span of 90 days.
That, you know what? That's exactly what I do. I need to do as well. Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
And what's it gonna do when Hulkamania and the largest arms in the world run wild on you?
Hulk comes to Tampa Bay Buccaneers practice. Obviously, big-time celebrity sighting with Tampa Bay. We talked about our celebrity sightings, but you ever been, like, I'm sure with young guys, like when John Elway, when I played with John Elway, was somewhat of a celebrity, but I was an older guy. He was a celebrity, not somewhat, but he was a celebrity, but I was an older guy. You ever see guys like that you've covered, like young guys come in and just be completely like overwhelmed with Peyton Manning, for instance, or maybe a Todd Helton, the Todd father when you were with the Rockies, covering the Rockies?
Yeah, certainly with Helton when they had Todd and the Toddlers. And guys, they just saw him as, you know, this mythical figure. Anything he'd say, it was kind of like, what would Todd do? They'd follow him around the locker room.
Right.
Manning was held in reverence that I hadn't seen in years. The only other player I saw held in reverence like that, where he was almost separate of the team, and I don't mean to say that in a negative connotation, but Cal Ripken Jr. with the Orioles, I mean, he was bigger than the team. He was bigger than baseball for a while, it felt like. You know, it is interesting, and I talked to Wes Welker about this, about Tom Brady. He said one of the reasons guys like Tom Brady, a new guy comes in, practice squad guy, or whatever, they sign a guy, 53rd man on the roster, he walks right up to him and says, hi, I'm Tom Brady, I'm the quarterback here, let me know if you need anything. And guys think it's a spoof, like,
right.
He's asking Kushner around with the camera, like, what's going on here, of course I know who you are, and he kind of puts it at ease. You know, with Manning, I've had guys tell me, like, they just, at times they had to stop themselves and be like, I'm on the field playing with Peyton Manning. Like, because you may have to remember, he was, at that point, 20, in some cases, what, 18 years older than some of those players?
Mm-hmm.
He's playing almost at 40. He's playing with guys that are like 22.
Like,
and they've grown up watching his entire career.
Right.
I mean, so it is a different thing. The only athlete I got starstruck from in my own life was Roger Staubach. Met him at Super Bowl 30 in Phoenix because he was my favorite player.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, my God, that's Roger Staubach. I was like, that's Chris Farley in the elevator with Paul McCartney.
Right. I still get that way. Like, I get to see Terry Bradshaw all the time, but the Steelers were my favorite team growing up. And I see, you know, I just spent 2 days with Terry at the Fox kind of summit, and it's still, I get that way around Terry. It's like, oh, my God, this is like one of my childhood heroes. So it's a pretty cool thing for me to be able to be, you know, to work with Terry and kind of be part of the crew. And he's so gracious. He's so much fun. He's just a great dude, you know. So it's a really cool thing.
Bringing it full circle, celebrities we met. When I lived in Yuma, Arizona, I met Bam Bam Bigelow, the wrestler, at the Yuma International Airport. It was at the time he was getting ready to fight Lawrence Taylor in WrestleMania.
Yes.
And so I walked up in my best, like, Randy Macho Man Savage. I was like, Bigelow! Lawrence Taylor's going to take you! You know, thinking he'd think it's funny.
Right.
He walks over to me and puts me in a headlock, just choking me out.
Right.
And they're like, my wife was like, how'd you know it was Bam Bam Bigelow? And I'm like, well, there's not many guys at that point that had a flame tattoo on their entire head.
Right.
And he was a big man. He started to choke me out, and he took it to the limit of the joke. Like, I was
I'm joking. I played in a couple of softball tournaments, so softball celebrity tournaments, with Big John Studd.
He's a big man. I saw him wrestle Hulk Hogan at Big Mac.
And
when I was
Big John Studd is the only guy I ever saw that made Joe Jacoby look short. Like, Big John Studd was, I mean, he was pretty close to 7 foot. I think 6'10"-ish. And just a huge, huge man. Those guys are ridiculously big. Hey, you know, we talked about Peyton Manning. We talked about the celebrity that is Peyton Manning. I want to talk to you about the qualities that made Peyton Manning what he is. And do you see any of those qualities? You've been around here. You've been covering this team. Do you see any of those qualities that intrigue you in regards to Case Keenum or the quarterbacks we have on this roster as it's currently constructed? Next, I'll talk to Troy about that. Slayer than Evans, live from UC Health Training Center. The Broncos get to, ready to set off their practice, their number 10 practice of the training camp right here at UC Health Training Center. Beautiful, beautiful morning. Sun is out. Field looks great, and the Broncos getting ready to go here in about 90 minutes. They'll kick off this practice. So we were talking about Eric Decker and Eric Decker going now to the New England Patriots, being signed by the Patriots. Kind of the similarities between between Tom Brady and between Peyton Manning and some of the qualities that make a great quarterback. So you've been around here more than I've been around here, and you followed them through the offseason. You're a insider here for the Broncos, Channel 7 insider of the Broncos. You cover them on a daily basis. Been on the beat for pretty much, since 2014?
Yeah.
So you were around Peyton Manning a bunch. Any similarities? Do you see anything in Case Keenum that intrigues you, that reminds you of Peyton Manning, that you look at and say, man, that's a really admirable quality, and that's something that resonates for teammates, and that'll be a lot like Peyton Manning?
Well, here's the thing Peyton Manning did that made him unique. He embraced the grind, Mark. He loved the parts that none of us like, mm-hmm. which is the homework, the study, the minutia, the hours and hours of watching film so one time it might matter in the fourth quarter. And that's what I see from Keenum, is his ability to just digest information and love doing it. He loves football. That much, it's contagious how much he loves football. So when I see him on the practice field, he takes his obsession for football and translates it to the practice field of that route worked, and then the receiver comes back. He's like, what about this? You always see him talking to the receiver or the back and saying, hey, but don't forget this part of the play. Don't forget this other layer. We're not just executing one thing. Think of what it means in terms of down in the second quarter or third quarter. That's the part that's similar to Manning. I'm not saying he's Peyton Manning. I'm just saying when asked the question, I see his attention to detail is similar. No one will be the same as Manning. I mean, he set a bar for me that no one will ever surpass. But Case Keenum embraces the grind. And as a quarterback, you've talked about this. It has to be a lifestyle. You have to live it and breathe it and love it. Mm-hmm. And he does love it. Some quarterbacks, you know, they roll their eyes. They have to do film because it's part of the, quote, job. He doesn't see this as a job. This is his first time starting in the NFL. And he's embracing everything that comes with that. And he's bringing guys with him. That's the other part of it, the component of leadership. He's saying, I'm taking my knowledge. I want to coach you up so we're all together on this. He understands the teamwork part of it. So those are the encouraging things I see about Case Keenum. The question is, can he do it for back-to-back years? He's never done that. He's had one really good season in the NFL. But what I can appreciate about Keenum is he's doing everything to put himself in position to succeed. Some athletes don't, and so when they fail, you're like, really? When your kids don't do their homework, right, you get a C on the test, what do you tell them?
Yeah.
You earned that.
You're right.
You
yeah.
didn't study. Like,
right.
What did you expect to happen? So when a guy doesn't put the time in away from the field, he doesn't know it, and then the first thing that he has to scribble outside the lines, he fails, you're like, well, what did you expect? Like, you deserve what you earn. And so Keenum is going to get what he deserves in terms of the work he puts in. That's why I'm optimistic their offense will be better.
You know, it's interesting because the Broncos are putting out some great stuff. There was a Case Keenum mic'd up during training camp.
I like that.
Right? And I think the thing that was, there was a couple of things. Like, let's go, you know, like the encouragement side of Case Keenum, there's an encouragement to him. There's an excitement about going out here. Let's go to work. Let's execute this. Let's roll, guys. There was that kind of aspect. Every time he's in the huddle, he's talking to different guys. He's talking about, let's go out here and execute. We set the tone. We do these things. It was pretty intriguing, because there's some real excitement there. There's some real leadership there. There is some, you know, there's some enthusiasm there that we haven't seen here in a couple of years. And I think part of that comes with, you know, that you're the guy. Like, you come in here, you're the guy. We paid you to be the guy. We need the guy, and you've become the guy. And I think that's a great thing, and I think that's one of the things that he's embracing right now. I think the other thing that intrigues me is exactly what you said. He likes that grind. He wants to be better. He is a young player. He knows he's getting his first opportunity. And let's face it, man, if this doesn't work, Troy, if he doesn't play well, if he regresses, if he goes back to quote-unquote journeyman status, you know what's going to happen? He's not going to get another opportunity.
Yeah, this might be his last opportunity.
Right, and I think he understands that. And I think playing from that position, I think that's a great thing. I mean, I think that's an exceptional thing. You know, when you talk to, and I've talked to several coaches, I've talked to John Elway, I've talked to, you know, Vance, I've talked to Bill Musgrave, I've talked to a lot of guys. I think they were excited about Case Keenum. They were excited about the potential of Case Keenum. They were excited about what they saw on film. My sense talking to people is he's not only met their expectations, but he's exceeded the expectations of this coaching staff coming into this camp.
And players have explained it to me that in the reflection of how he's a grinder, there were some days in OTA where it wasn't smooth, where it wasn't all rainbows and unicorns, and he was grinding through it in a new offense with new teammates. Mm-hmm. And I've had multiple players tell me from OTAs to now how much he's improved, and they say that as a matter of respect. He could have come in here and say, it's my team, I got my $25 million, I kind of made it, OTAs, you know.
Right.
And they're saying even from OTAs to now how much it's changed. But where he has exceeded expectations is his leadership and the positivity, kind of the power of positivity. He knows he inherited a team that's 7-15 their last 22, 2-10 over their last 12. They don't need a yeller screamer guy right now. That's not the tone. They need a guy like, we got this. Come on, you're coming with me. We got, and sometimes, you know, it can feel Pollyanna, but it doesn't with him. That's the other thing I hear is it's authentic.
Right.
The Case is who he's always been. It's not like, oh, I was always a backup. Now I'm the guy. Now I'm driving a car you don't recognize. My hair is different. I talk different. I got a personal assistant. Nothing's changed with Case Keenum. He just keeps putting the work in. And he's authentic, and that's why it should work, but he can't do it alone. He's not that player.
Right.
He's not, you know,
right.
Aaron Rodgers,
yeah.
Drew Brees,
yeah.
Tom Brady. He's going to need help, but he's doing his part. So there's no more excuses to say, we don't have a quarterback, so basically because of that, everything else stinks. They have a quarterback now, how can they get better around him?
I always talk about authenticity, and one of the issues that you get into, let's take it from a coaching standpoint. You roll in, you coach under an iconic coach, like you coach under Shanahan or you coach under Bill Belichick. And all of a sudden you come in and you take over an organization and you try to be Bill Belichick. You always say, this is how we did it in New England. This is how we did it in New England. This is how Bill Belichick did it. Eventually, you're not you. You're like Bill Belichick Jr. And the odds of you having success outside of that are pretty – they're pretty slim because players read through that.
They see through it if you're a little mini-me.
Right.
If you're trying to be something you're not.
Exactly. And I think you can relate this to Paxton Lynch. You know, when Paxton Lynch makes a play, he scrambles and makes a play and he gets pumped up and he's like, yeah. I think there's a lot of guys when he does that, that roll their eyes. That look at it like, yeah, dude, you're not – you know what? You haven't produced. Don't get excited about one. Like, there's almost this sense that is not going to work. Where, as you mentioned, with Case Keenum, there's an authenticity to it. Like, he's put in the work. You can be excited about something. You know, I've said this for a while, Troy, is that I think they're going to get a veteran quarterback to back up Case Keenum. I think that'll happen here in the next week or so where they'll get a veteran guy. And you
that would have to be a free agent then.
Right.
Because if they're going to wait on Bridgewater or someone of that ilk or Mike Glennon type,
right.
That would have to be at the end of training camp.
Yeah.
That would have to be at the end of training camp.
I think they'll do it sooner than later. Is there anything, like, is there anything in this camp? Because I think, like, they box themselves in a hole to some degree, the backup quarterback. If we're having that discussion, let's just have it. They've bucked themselves into a hole because they said it was going to be an open competition. Like last year was an open competition. You know what they did? They rotated quarterbacks, right? There was truly an open competition. They said there was going to be an open competition between Paxton Lynch and Chad Kelly. And there really hasn't been an open competition. When the twos are up, Paxton Lynch goes in. And, you kind of box yourself into a hole, because if you open that up now, you're essentially saying to everybody, hey, Paxton Lynch hasn't performed, and Chad Kelly has. At least now you have the built-in excuse. Yeah, but Chad Kelly's doing it against the threes, and Paxton Lynch is doing it against the twos, and so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But if you go to it now, then you're basically admitting that you, and you're even lessening Paxton Lynch's value in the trade market. So, you're kind of boxed into a hole with the way you've established this camp by saying it was an open competition, but not really making it an open competition.
Well,
do you read it that way?
No, exactly. It's like in baseball, you keep playing a guy who's struggling because you want to trade him. Like, why is that guy out there? Well, if you bench him, you've now completely undermined his trade value.
Right.
So you're running him out there saying, he's going to get out of it. And when you get him a new change of scenery, and that's kind of what you're doing with Lynch, as soon as you give Kelly second team reps the way this camp has started, you've said he's caught Paxton Lynch. I'm not saying he's beating him out, but now you're saying you've seen enough from Kelly and, frankly, not enough from Lynch, that Lynch is close to equal footing.
Right.
How does that help your trade value if you're trying to move Lynch? To move Lynch at this point would be for me, again, I'm not a GM, it would be a sixth or seventh rounder conditional 2020. I mean, that's what you'd be left with. You just saw Corey Coleman get moved by the Browns to the Bills for a bag of balls.
Right.
I mean, there's not a lot there.
He was a 2016 first rounder as well, just like Paxton Lynch was, and they got a seventh round conditional for him, I think.
In 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, and Coleman hasn't done enough to completely expose himself if not being a player. Lynch, there's enough tape now where you'd be concerned who would bite on that. Somebody will.
Sure.
You know the league, that there's always will fix him.
Right.
When we get him in our system,
right. He'll
be fine. But you brought up, you know, that part of authenticity. You were expanding on that point we were talking about with Case. With Paxton, it's almost like he's an actor playing quarterback. Like, he knows how it's supposed to look, but it's not coming naturally to him. So when you see actors play the roles of somebody,
yeah. It's
like, well, it kind of looks like it, but it's not authentic. Like, when you're watching the film, you're like, he's just, you know, it doesn't feel right. And with Paxton, it's like he's trying so hard to make it right.
Right.
It feels forced. There's
right. Like,
it's not natural.
Speaking of which, so I do the movie Red Dawn. And there's a whole opening scene of the remake of Red Dawn. It's all football, right? And you ever see a director, like, they create that camera thing. How do you do that? Like this? Like the camera box, right? Where they put one hand up and then they flip the other hand upside down and they make like a square where they're looking through, like they're looking through a camera lens and they look at it.
So the people are listening at home, it's like Drake's Feelings video, except Mark's doing a square, just
right.
So you know.
Just, okay, so it's a square. And Josh Peck was a Disney kid or something, and he was the quarterback, and he has not one athletic bone in his body.
Right.
I mean, it was embarrassing watching him run plays. I was embarrassed for him. I had to turn away and go, oh my God, this is bad. And so I look at the director and I'm like, how in the world are you gonna shoot this, right? And so he gives me that little square thing, and he puts it like I'm just gonna right here on the face, like it just gonna be like that's all you're gonna see of this kid, right? And then we're gonna use the stunt guys to actually run plays, because this kid like he is awful, like I mean he's like he's gonna hurt himself. It was that bad. And so it's one of those situations where Paxton Lynch is an actor playing quarterback. It does not look good. I want to ask you this. I have a question mark coming up. I believe question mark's coming up. Is that correct? Yeah. Question mark is coming up. Question Troy. You got a question for Troy. Hit us up on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. You got a question for either of us. But I have a question for you coming out of this thing. Has Chad Kelly, think about this, has Chad Kelly caught Paxton Lynch in that number two competition in your mind?